Good evening. My name is Takesha, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the National MS Society Advancing Solution Wellness Conference Call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. Ms. Heather Lee, you may begin your conference.
Great. Thank you. Good evening, everyone. My name is Heather Lee, and I'm a member of the Society's National Development Team, and I'm delighted to welcome each of you to today's research teleconference, Advancing Wellness Solutions in MS. As valued friends and supporters, we are eager to have you participate in what should be a very engaging and exciting discussion amongst our guest speakers. So I'd like to let you know that there, as Takesha said, there will be an opportunity at the end of today's call to pose any questions you may have on today's topic specifically. And again, when that time comes, we'll have the operator re-announce how to instruct you how to pose a question. So at this time, I'm pleased to introduce today's discussion leader, the Society's Executive Vice President of Research, Dr. Bruce Bibo. With over 25 years of experience in MS research, Dr. Bibo is responsible for directing the Society's comprehensive research strategy. So thanks for leading us through this discussion today, Bruce.
Oh, my pleasure, Heather. And I want to welcome everybody to this call and thank you all for joining. And I'm just pleased to have the opportunity to speak with everybody today and share with you the progress that we're making towards advancing wellness solutions for people with MS. The society knows that people with MS are seeking more and better information to guide their wellness choices. Specifically, people are desperate for more information regarding diet, and exercise, and mood, and as a consequence, understanding and addressing gaps in wellness research and using this knowledge to inform potentially life-changing solutions is a society priority. So I'm pleased today to be joined by two individuals that are helping the society lead this important work, and I've asked them to help me describe the progress that we've made so far. So first, I'd like to introduce Kathy Costello. Kathy is the Vice President of Healthcare Access at the Society, and we're colleagues in the Advocacy Services and Research Department. In this capacity, Kathy works with a diverse team of experts on educational initiatives, wellness strategies, research, and numerous initiatives focused on improving access to high-quality healthcare. Kathy is also an adult nurse practitioner at the Johns Hopkins Multiple Sclerosis Center, where she's part of a team that provides evaluation and care for people with MS. Kathy also serves on the Consortium of MS Centers, MS Specialist Certification Committee. She's the past president of the International Organization of Multiple Sclerosis Nurses and has written and lectured extensively on MS and MS care. It's also my pleasure today to welcome Dr. Robert Model to the call. Dr. Model is an associate professor in the Department of Kinesiology and Community Health at the University of Illinois in Chicago. Dr. Model earned his PhD in exercise science at the University of Georgia in Athens, where he also completed a postdoctoral fellowship in neuroscience. His research focuses on physical activity in people with neurologic diseases such as MS. In addition to his leadership with the Society's Wellness Initiative, Dr. Model has received Society funding to train young investigators in rehabilitation research, as well as funding to investigate behavioral strategies to increase physical activity in people with MS. Dr. Model also serves as one of the Society's expert grant reviewers, and I thank him for that service. And he also helps the Society focus our research funding on the most impactful projects possible. So thanks to both of you again, and let's go ahead and get started. So Kathy, I'm going to start with you. Can you tell us what catalyzed the Society's new focus on wellness?
Sure, I'm happy to, Bruce. And as you mentioned in your introduction, people have said to us that this is information that they're very interested in. In fact, when we looked at the number one reason, the requests that people make to the society through various media, through our Information and Resource Center, where people call with questions, through social media, including Facebook and Twitter and things like that, and through a survey we did as part of our Strategic Response Outreach Initiative last year, we really realized that this is information that people need to know. They want this information and they need it. They want strategies that can help them live better every day. How can they live their best lives? And while the treatments that we have for MS are certainly part of that, people were looking for other types of strategies. And primarily, they requested information about diet, about exercise, and information about how to manage mood and issues that people were having with their mood, including symptoms of depression and anxiety. So how we responded was we convened a group of people, realizing that the evidence around these wellness interventions and multiple sclerosis seemed somewhat thin. We convened a group of experts, including researchers, clinicians, people with MS, society staff, both from the United States and from Canada, to take a look at the evidence around these important areas that people had identified. Identify what we know, what the gaps in our knowledge happen to be, and how we as an organization need to work to help to fill those gaps. So since that time, we've been working through many of the recommendations that came out of that meeting.
Excellent. That's a great description. Rob, I'm going to turn to you now. And I know you helped to organize this meeting and you contributed significantly to the discussions that were focused on reviewing the current state of our knowledge in diet and exercise and mood, among other things. Can you tell us what you think were the most promising areas of research that we should be focusing on?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on this call. And I think I'm going to restrict my comments to probably the most promising areas regarding exercise in persons with multiple sclerosis. And in fact, we just wrote and published a paper on the top 10 research questions for exercise and MS. The top question on that list was whether or not exercise is actually an MS disease-modifying behavior. That is, can exercise serve as a behavior that helps to actually counteract the disease processes and slow the disease progression? The second thing that we advocated for was to examine the effects of exercise on the tissue in the central nervous system, or the brain, brainstem, spinal cord, and optic nerve, using techniques such as magnetic resonance imaging. In fact, our campus in Urbana-Champaign has been a leader in studying how exercise can improve brain health in older adults who otherwise don't have any chronic disease conditions. And we've now started to adopt similar paradigms to study how exercise can improve the structure and function of the brain in persons with multiple sclerosis. One of the top areas also that I think that we're starting to dedicate more and more research to is looking at the effects of exercise on comorbid conditions in people with MS. So we're increasingly learning that persons with MS are at risk for cardiovascular diseases, metabolic diseases such as type 2 diabetes or obesity and things along those lines. And not only are they at risk for those comorbid conditions, but those actually speed up the rate at which the disease progresses over time. And we know from the general population that exercise is a wonderful way of reducing the risk of these comorbid conditions. So many people are beginning to understand and examine whether or not we can use exercise to manage comorbid conditions and whether or not that in turn has some disease-modifying impact. And lastly, we need to think more and more and more about the effects of exercise on the many symptoms of multiple sclerosis. So we have lots of data that exercise can improve fatigue, that it can improve depression and things along those lines. But what we really need to spend a lot of our time and effort on is understanding the effects of exercise on fatigue in individuals who have severe and tractable fatigue that, for example, prevents them from maintaining gainful employment, who have depression that also has those similar type effects. So those are probably four of the areas that we need the most research effort in the very, very, very near future.
Thanks, Rob. I really appreciate you bringing up the idea of comorbidities. I think that's an emerging area that is getting a lot of attention and has a large potential impact on people's lives. So I appreciate you bringing that up. So, Kathy, I want to change the subject a little bit. I attended part of the meeting, and I remember there was a lot of discussion about mood. So can you tell us what we know about mood in MS?
Sure. So when we think about mood and MS, we often think about depression. And the reason that we do is that it's the most prevalent and possibly the most impactful symptom that occurs in MS. When someone is depressed, it may stop them from being able to participate in any activity, whether it's a wellness activity or really anything that they want to do. So we looked at some of the things where there is some evidence of benefit to mood or supporting mood or improving it. As Dr. Model mentioned, exercise may be very important here. We looked at things like telephone counseling, things such as acupuncture, guided imagery, massage, meditation, mindful meditation, adaptive coping, and interventions such as cognitive behavioral therapy. But really where the discussion turned was, what do we do about depression? And it was identified that this is a symptom that is sadly under-recognized and under-reported. And it's so vitally important to manage this that we discussed taking more of a look at how do we have early intervention, early recognition. How do we make sure that people get the treatment or the counseling that they need? How do we improve the access to those mental health providers that people may need? So it was a little bit of a different discussion in our wellness meeting than around diet and exercise, because here we actually looked at a symptom and took a deeper dive into what do we need to do to help people and to give them the resources and information that they need to manage this very devastating symptom.
Thanks, Kathy. And I know that the society is going to take an even deeper dive into this topic in a couple of weeks, in June, actually, in Chicago, looking at emotional wellness and MS, trying to figure out what we know and what the gaps are, and how we could sort of develop strategies for bridging those gaps. So bringing the thought leaders around the country, specifically in mood and depression in Chicago to work on this very important problem.
That's right, Bruce. And in fact, we're also including, and very importantly, people with MS who have experienced mood disorder and their care partners, because really it's their voice, it's their experiences, the things that they're living with every day that help to drive not only our research, but the information that we need and the strategies that we need to help develop with people with MS in order to help them most.
That's great. So Rob, I'm going to turn to you. I'm going to ask you to be a little outside your comfort zone and talk and get into this diet discussion just a little bit. And there was a lot of discussion about the promise of diets and the challenges with studying diets at the meeting. I wonder, you know, if you could share what your takeaways were about the discussion around diets and MS.
Yeah, thanks for pushing me outside of my comfort zone, Bruce. clearly, I'm not a dietitian. No one will mistake that in the world. You know, overall, I think we all know and believe that diet is essential for the health of people with MS. And I think we all firmly believe that diet is essential for improving the health of the central nervous system and the brain as a primary organ in the body. And we do a lot of research on diet nutrition on the University of Illinois campus among older adults and also among kind of children and adolescents. But what we really need to start doing is doing this research on diet in individuals who have a chronic lifelong disease like multiple sclerosis. And this is a very challenging area, and it's very complicated because all of us are already, to some extent, involved in a diet. We eat. We kind of we're taking in nutrients on a day-to-day basis. And so any intervention that we do, we always have to do on top of what people are already consuming. So if you want to do a diet intervention on supplementation with vitamin D, well, somebody already might be eating a diet that's very rich in nutrients that stimulate vitamin D synthesis. So it's a very complicated research question. The answers that we have right now don't provide a clear and compelling picture of what diet is optimal. I know that there's ideas on the Swank diet and other diets out there, but people haven't done the really strong, compelling clinical trials to really say that this diet does indeed modify the disease. So I think one of the big take-homes from the meeting is that we need to really invest considerable time and effort in bringing together scientists to work collectively on this problem of designing the best clinical trials to understand the dietary factors that improve brain health. And one of my colleagues, as an example, is just starting to look at just what are people with MS eating relative to the general population to see if there may be some answers in not just supplements, but food choices and how that might play into the diet. Because if you think about it, if I'm someone with a lot of fatigue and a lot of depression, and I have difficulties managing daily life, which involves cooking and things along those lines, I might be more inclined to make food choices that are easier for me, like going to McDonald's and grabbing food that may not be very healthy. And so we want to look at those food choices to see if there's any answers there as to how we might regulate the diet. I hope that makes sense.
No, that was great. Glad I pushed you out of your comfort zone a little bit. It was really good. I thought about that. Described it excellently. I do remember, Kathy, from the time I was there in the meeting that there were some real challenges to formally studying diets in general and diets in MS. Do you want to maybe summarize what you heard as some of the big challenges in doing some of these studies?
Yes, and certainly there are challenges with diet. And I think any of us can understand that there are challenges to what we eat on a daily basis or if we want to make a change in that. So one of the first challenges is, can someone adhere to a particular diet? And even before that, what diet should we study? What aspect about it? Is it a supplement? Is it an entire diet? Perhaps it's restricting someone's calories or an intermittent fast, for instance. Who do we study? Is it people with newly diagnosed MS? Is it people with relapsing MS? Is it people with progressive MS? Can you have all of the disease types in the same study, or would that confound your results? What would the control group be? Wouldn't people feel that if they weren't on the study diet, that they weren't getting what they should, that they might want to try that anyway? How do we make sure that people actually are on the diet? Do we bring them into a diet center and provide meals? Do we send home the food with them? Do we trust that they're able to adhere, which is just difficult by human nature, having nothing to do with whether someone has MS or not? Plus, there are other variables. What if some of the people in the study are smokers and some are not? Smoking has been determined to be a risk factor in MS and may, in fact, impact the disease progression. Are there other illnesses that may play a role in diet studies and impacting the results? So there's many, many challenges. I will say, though, collectively in this group, despite the fact that we identified challenges, everyone in the group said that none of these challenges were such that they would prevent people from moving forward. They would meet the challenges. We would figure out ways collectively and collaboratively how to meet the challenges so that we could get this important information. While there is no diet that's been identified as being helpful in MS, there have been clues through small studies that have been previously done to say that we need to study this. We need to know more information. We hear about it all the time, and we hear about diets that seem to help people. And while that's fantastic, the information that we have is not able to be translated to all people or to the majority of people. And that's where our research has to come in to help us to understand what could be helpful or harmful, for that matter, to the largest group of people with MS.
Bruce, can I comment for a second?
Absolutely.
So, you know, one of the areas relative to diet that I think is really, really intriguing and presents a lot of opportunity is the recent data coming out on dietary sodium intake.
Yeah.
That is, it seems that there are lots of strong data from animal basic sciences and now emerging from humans suggesting that individuals with MS who engage in a high-sodium diet have a lot of complications of their disease. Now, the reason I point this out is because, in theory, that's a source of diet that we should be able to target with interventions and teaching people themselves how to modify salt intake. And so, to me, that's like a really exciting area and something that we can try to do, because we can also assess whether or not they're doing it by collecting some blood or urine samples and assaying them to see what their sodium levels are. So it gets beyond a lot of the other problems with diet. I just wanted to point that out.
No, I'm glad you pointed it out, and there's, as you mentioned, there is some real emerging evidence about high sodium, and actually specifically sodium chloride. And I am aware that there are, in fact, we just recently approved a pilot study in the DASH diet in people with MS. And the DASH diet is an acronym for Dietary Approaches to Stopping High Cholesterol. And so there is an ongoing study or planned study to look at this issue of sodium in MS. So I'm glad you brought that up, Rob. That's important. I think the other thing I took away, Kathy and Rob, from mm-hmm. listening to that part of the meeting was that you know, as someone that has a kind of big overview of our research portfolio and worry about budgets and financing, that you know, the costs for doing a rigorous study on diet were very high, and I think that's another challenge that mm-hmm. that we have to think about and meet when it comes to exploring diets as well. So I do think it's important to point out to our callers that the Society has committed and continues to commit resources to understanding how people with MS can use wellness strategies to help them live their best lives and live their best lives now. So we're currently investing more than $24 million to support 78 different research projects that are focused on advancing a variety of different wellness solutions. And while we've learned a lot in recent years, there's still so much more that we'd really like to know. So Rob, could you describe some of what you see are the challenges, notwithstanding some of the ones you mentioned related to diets, but some of the challenges in conducting research into wellness and why progress might be a little slower than we would like it to be?
Yeah, so I think perhaps one of the biggest issues is that we don't necessarily have a critical mass of well-trained researchers that are committed to a career on wellness issues in MS. And I know that the Society is committed to funding really productive researchers to become mentors, that is, to bring new promising researchers into their lab space, their lab environment, and do a number of things. Perhaps the most important thing is to develop that passion and that commitment to a life of research on wellness and MS. And so, for example, I have a mentor-based postdoctoral fellowship where I've attracted two people to come and study with me, and one of them has subsequently obtained a faculty position where she is committed to doing research on exercise in people with severe multiple sclerosis. These are people who have MS that has advanced to the point where they're in a wheelchair and developing exercise programs to help them out. And so we have to attract these individuals. We have to sell them on the importance of this research for changing the lives of individuals with MS. And quite frankly, that's what brought me into this. I think the second thing is that we need to convince them that there is an opportunity for them to lead productive research careers. More and more academicians such as myself are being pressured not just to teach and not just to do research, but do research that is fundable, that is, that can garner money coming in to do bigger and larger and more impactful studies. And the commitment that the MS Society has placed towards funding these new investigators goes a long way to getting them to think, oh, now that I'm done with my training, I'm going to go start my career in this area. So I think those are two of the issues. The third issue to really designing and doing high-quality research relative to rehabilitation is the training that they receive to be clever and creative scientists. That is, teaching them how to maybe look at a problem in a different way with a different lens or from a different angle. That is, change the paradigm under which we address a problem and try to think of a new way to solve the problem that might come up with a new answer to that age-old issue. And that involves teaching people about scientific methods, teaching them about how to be inquisitive, and that's a really challenging thing for people to want to do, because you got to push them, like Bruce, you did earlier, out of their comfort zone. Because we all want to approach questions within our comfort zone, because that's an easy thing to do. But we got to push people outside of their comfort zone. So to me, those are ways that we're going to bring in young, hungry, passionate, well-prepared researchers to move this field forward in the next decade, two decades, three decades, and really make a huge impact in the area of MS.
Thanks, Robin. I think, that's one of the messages I think we're trying to send with this initiative is, you know, that this is a priority for the society and trying to encourage these, as you mentioned, young, creative, driven scientists to focus their intellect on this important problem on behalf of people living with MS. So I think that's exactly one of the goals of this effort. I do want people, Rob, to hear a little bit more about your research, because some of the stuff you're doing is really exciting and touches on this wellness issue. So one of the things I find really interesting about the work that you're doing is, in addition to trying to understand the benefits of exercise and mobility, which you've described nicely so far, you're also examining the potential benefits of exercise on cognition. And so I wondered if you could define a little bit what exactly we mean by cognition, and then maybe explain what you've learned about the role exercise might play in improving cognition in people with MS.
Yeah, that's. Thank you for that opportunity to talk about research on exercise and cognitive function. And to me, cognitive function really represents your capacity to process information and make decisions that are correct about that information, to take information in and process it and remember things and keep them in memory, both short-term and long-term. as well as the capacity to do very complicated tasks such as driving down the street, making sure that you're following the signs on the road, you're looking around you and seeing all the other cars and planning and anticipating, and that's what we call executive or higher order cognitive functioning. One of the things that we've realized is that upwards of 50 to 60% of people with MS demonstrate cognitive impairment based on neuropsychological testing. And that cognitive impairment manifests in a lot of different ways. And in particular, it affects people's ability to maintain employment. It affects their ability to maintain independent living. And so it's something that really, because of its prevalence and impact, requires a lot of attention to its management. Now, the traditional approaches of medicine to manage cognition and MS have really not panned out. And so a lot of people have looked at more of rehabilitation approaches. And so there's the group led by John DeLuca and Nancy Chiarvalotti at Kessler Foundation that are looking at cognitive rehabilitation. And that's a very fruitful and interesting approach. We've looked at and started to do more and more research looking at exercise training. And our interest in exercise training stems in large part from 20 years of research on this campus looking at exercise as a way of improving cognition in older adults. So what we've done is we've systematically adopted a similar paradigm that was used to establish exercise for improving cognition in older adults. We've started out with two sets of studies. One type of the studies is looking at what we call aerobic fitness or aerobic capacity. This is a marker of someone's aerobic exercise training history and looking at whether or not that's related to cognitive functioning. And what we've found out is individuals who have a higher aerobic capacity, which indicates that they've engaged in more aerobic exercise, do better on neuropsychological tests of cognition. They also have better brain structure and function in areas of the brain that are associated with cognition, such as the hippocampus, the thalamus, and other regions like that. Coinciding with that line of research, we're also doing research that we focus on acute or single bouts of exercise and how they affect cognition over short periods of time. So one of my graduate students, a gentleman by the name of Brian Sandroff, has been doing these studies where he looks at how cognition changes from before to after single bouts of yoga or riding a bicycle or simply walking on a treadmill. And what he's shown is that walking on a treadmill seems to be the best way of improving cognition over a very short period of time. He subsequently demonstrated that it doesn't matter what intensity the walking exercise is. It could be light, moderate, or vigorous. All three of those have a similar improvement in cognition. So what we've just started initiating right now, just started about 2 weeks ago, is a study where we're taking people with MS who have some degree of cognitive impairment. We're having them engage in a four-month aerobic exercise training program that involves walking on the treadmill, and we're comparing that to a placebo group. And we're trying to examine whether or not this aerobic exercise training program can improve all domains of cognitive functioning, that is information processing speed, learning and memory, as well as executive control, as well as improve brain structure and function, as well as other markers of brain health in people with MS. And so this is very much in its infancy. But it's an area of research based on what we've seen in the older adult population that holds a lot of promise for people with MS. And just to say one last thing, there's also a nice body of research that has shown exercise improves cognition in other populations with neurological problems such as schizophrenia, Parkinson's disease, and there's lots of animal work that shows the biological pathways by which this is occurring. So this is something that is going to be a game changer in the next 5 years for managing cognition with MS.
That sounds really encouraging and just another, you know, another thing to inspire us to get off the couch, all of us, whether you live with MS or not. So, Kathy, I want to we kind of have to wrap up. I do want to ask you, you know, as we move forward with this work, you know, how do you see the society using this research to create recommendations on lifestyle choices, and how are we going to incorporate this information into the wellness programming that the society directs for people with MS?
Right, that's a great question, Bruce. And you know, what we learn from research informs what we do in terms of our programs, our resources, the support that we provide. And we have to understand that research and programs exist on a continuum. And because there's going to be questions now and there's going to be questions in the future that we will look to research to answer. And as we find these answers along the way, they will inform all of the things that we do, the programs, the information, and so forth. And I think what we want to do is provide validated information for people so that they can make their own lifestyle choices and decisions. So in terms of what we're doing now around programming, we certainly have programs around wellness. Just as we have a lot of research that's ongoing, we have programs that are ongoing around some of the things that we've mentioned. There's programs that involve exercise on land and also aquatic exercise and yoga and other types of interventions, smoking cessation, for instance. And as we look forward, we realize that we need the expertise of others. So we're looking to collaborative relationships with other organizations that have a significant amount of expertise. For instance, CanDo MS, which is an organization that's been around for some time. It used to be called the Huga Center, and it is a wellness program. And this is an organization that provides live programming as well as webinar programming all around wellness, not only for the person living with MS, but for the care partner. We're also looking at collaborations with the YMCAs. And the reason is they're all over. They are really wellness-focused, and they're interested in collaborations where their fitness instructors can learn about MS and how fitness may need to be altered for depending on the symptoms that someone is experiencing or the challenges that they are living with. But when they learn about MS, they're able to deliver wellness programs to anyone with MS. So they become an important partner and have been an important partner around the country. So I think it's important to realize that our programs are robust and ongoing. However, we do look to research to help inform even better programs. And with that increased knowledge and maybe different knowledge, it informs different types of programs that become important for people with MS.
And thanks, Kathy. Very, very eloquently stated. Before we open the floor for questions, I wanted to just leave you with a few parting thoughts. So as we mentioned previously, we're already funding a great deal of research in the area of lifestyle and wellness. However, I think there's a strong desire to better focus these investments on areas that have the greatest promise for improving the lives of people living with MS. Mm-hmm. And answering those questions that are really important to people that are living with MS. And by doing this, get answers to these questions as quickly as we possibly can. So we're also going to have to balance this this desire and need with some practical limitations that we're going to encounter when trying to answer some of these questions. And I think these are all considerations that are being discussed and being worked out by the Wellness and Lifestyle Initiative work team as they develop recommendations to the society. So, Kathy, I know you're working with this team, you're leading this work. Could you, and we have just a few minutes, could you share some of the preliminary progress that the Lifestyle and Wellness and Lifestyle work team has had in the last few months?
Sure, I'm happy to. This has been an exciting initiative at the society. And the first thing that we did, of course, was the meeting that we've talked about already in Fort Worth. And out of that has come a summary that kind of explains a lot of what we've discussed tonight What do we know around the areas of diet, exercise, and mood? What are we still missing in our knowledge? And what do we need to do in order to provide that information? So the society convened a group of staff that come from all areas of the organization to take a look at the issues around wellness. And we have basically separated our work into four areas, and those four areas will be ongoing. And they include research, programs and collaborations, information and resources, which includes what is on our website and what print materials or what live material, live programming we're going to have. It includes advocacy issues. So I think in the area of research, this is a North American initiative, and we have convened a planning group to look at the next steps. And one of the options is to have a meeting to look at how these kinds of studies need to be done, what are the priorities of wellness research, and how do we move forward. And really the more exciting initiative that we're heavily considering is the development of a wellness research network. This will require a little bit more time, but I think it brings people together and it utilizes that collective knowledge and expertise so that we can get to solutions much faster than if we have independent researchers working in these areas. These studies are difficult, as we've mentioned, and they're costly. So the more that we can collaborate and put the best minds together, the best chance we have of coming out with solutions in a much shorter period of time. We've kind of talked about programs, but we will continue to look at improved programs and collaborations, as I've mentioned. We had a meeting just today, as a matter of fact, on our website and the information that we're presenting around living well with multiple sclerosis and the changes that we need to make so that people have the best information so that they can make informed choices. And finally, in advocacy, what are the areas that are important to people? What legislative changes might need to be made so that people have the best access to wellness providers as well as wellness initiatives? So those are just a few areas, but this is exciting work. We have a remarkably talented group of people working on it, and honestly, I see great things in the very near future from the society.
Thanks, Kathy. And I wanted to also add to that in addition to experts, scientific experts and policy experts, that I know you're also engaging people living with or with a personal connection to MS in a lot of these efforts as well. So we make sure that we are always keeping that perspective in the heart
absolutely.
And center of everything that we're doing.
In fact, when we talked about the website today, everything that we talked about, we said, you know, this is our thoughts, but we really need to vet this with people with MS. Is this really what they are asking us for? Is this the way that the information needs to be best delivered? So you're absolutely correct in keeping people with MS at the center and really the forefront of what we do, because that's really who we are, and we want to help people make their best decisions. So knowing how they want that information delivered and the information that they need is really paramount.
Well, thanks for elaborating on that. And I know that Kathy and I and Rob could go on and on and on, it's time to hear from you. So we have about 10 minutes to take questions from the audience. Just to point out that we're not really in a position to answer any questions about your personal treatment, but that we're happy to discuss your questions about wellness research and some of the things we talked about today. So I'd like just to ask the operator again if she could remind us how to submit a question.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster.
Thank you. And while we're waiting, we did have some questions come in advance of the call. So I thought maybe we'd kick it off with one of these questions. And this is a really interesting question. And it came from someone who's a certified integrative health coach. And this question is around, you know, how supportive how supportive are wellness professionals? How's that going to figure into the delivery of wellness? I think, how supportive would our healthcare professionals be, Kathy? I'll ask this to you to start with. In the delivery of some of these wellness strategies, knowing that many people with MS, you know, their primary care physician is their neurologist. I wonder if you'd be able to comment on that question.
Sure. So I think as people become more informed, and research informs not only people with MS, but research certainly informs providers, both primary care providers as well as MS providers. And as the information grows around the impact that wellness strategies have on MS, I think it makes conversations certainly easier and more meaningful. I do think that there is reluctance on the part of some providers to have the discussion because at the present time, we don't have a lot of evidence. So it makes a robust discussion somewhat more difficult. However, people with MS really want these discussions to occur and want to know the best strategies that they can employ now and then perhaps change them as the evidence mounts. So I think that from an organizational standpoint, an important role for the society is to provide MS providers as well as primary care providers with the information. You know, as that information comes out, can we provide that to physicians, nurse practitioners, PAs, et cetera, so that they can have meaningful conversations with people about the strategies that can be best used on a daily basis. So I think it's somewhat uneven because of what we know at the present time, but I think as we learn more, this will improve. And I think our role is to help providers have the conversation and to help people with MS know the best questions to ask so that that conversation can take place.
So Bruce, can I chime in on that for a second?
Please.
So this is something that we're spending a lot of time looking at right now. We've systematically led an investigation to find out what it is that the patients actually want from healthcare providers relative to wellness, particularly exercise behavior. Because I think to start to train physicians or other providers on how to counsel patients, they need to have a sense of what the patients actually want. So that's where we started. We subsequently started to talk to our providers, and this is something that we've talked to quite a few providers about right now. And the providers, they want to know what the patients want. And so there's a real disconnect there. So we've been working with the society to fund a major initiative of ours, which is to develop a conceptual network or model for integrating the patient needs and wants with the patient or the provider's kind of needs and wants relative to training materials, to come up with a comprehensive model that actually facilitates the interaction between patients and providers. And ultimately, that will generate a toolkit that can be utilized in the patient-provider interaction to counsel this. And I think that really is the way forward. We need to synthesize what patients want with what providers need to meet those needs and create a model that guides a toolkit. Otherwise, we're just going to continue to shoot in the dark.
I think that's a great point, Rob. I'm going to ask the operator if we have any questions in the queue.
And at this time, there are no questions.
Okay. Well, I have another one that came in before the call, and I think it's a really good question. And it's, you know, how can the wellness strategies, some of those that we talked about today, specifically help people living with progressive MS? Maybe, Kathy, I'd ask you to kind of kick that off. I mean, what do you think the needs are specifically of people with progressive MS, and how can wellness strategies maybe help fulfill those needs?
Sure. So I think the major frustration that we hear from people with progressive MS is that there aren't any therapies available. And in terms of disease-modifying therapies, that's perhaps true. But I think in the area of wellness interventions, there are actually strategies that can be of benefit. I think Rob has already spoken extensively about the role of exercise. And I think that the role of exercise is not only in relapsing MS, it's in all types of MS. And it has been established in many studies over time that exercise can improve endurance and strength and reduce fatigue level. And I think all of these are important to people with progressive MS. I think we have to be looking at comorbidities, as Rob also mentioned earlier, and these are higher in people with MS and perhaps more so in people with more progressive MS, and therefore utilizing wellness strategies to reduce the risk of comorbidities is actually very important to one's overall health, which will impact someone's MS health as well. I think as we see certain types of symptomatology that occur in all types of MS, but certainly and perhaps more so in people with progressive MS, when we look at more cognitive dysfunction, more mobility challenges, that a lot of our wellness-focused strategies can be very, very helpful for people with this type of MS. So we even may have inklings that some of our strategies may impact the disease itself. And I think Rob had mentioned some of that a little bit earlier as well, that we need to know that is this making a change in the symptom or are these strategies making a change in the disease process? And that's where additional research is needed, but I think that there's certainly reason to believe that these kinds of studies will occur and we'll have those types of answers.
That's great, Kathy. Rob, do you want to elaborate at all on that?
Yeah, I kind of tend to think about this from a slightly different angle. And I like to think about what is happening in progressive MS that might be different from relapsing or remitting MS. And I believe that there's growing consensus that progressive MS is more of a neurodegenerative condition as opposed to an immune-mediated condition. And what I mean by that is that we're losing the capacity for the nutrients in the brain to support the health of the neurons themselves. And so why is that important? Well, what we have to then think about is which of our wellness strategies can actually impact the neuronal health contributing factors in people with progressive MS. And I believe that at least in animal studies, there are data supporting that both nutritional-based diet studies and exercise studies can impact these neurotrophic factors that are important for maintaining the health of the brain and the neurons themselves, which is what's deteriorating in progressive MS. So I think that there's a lot of promise out there. We just have to do more of the research. Whether we like it or not, I think researchers are stuck with the easy question, which is wellness in relapsing and remitting MS. And now we have to tackle the really challenging question, which is wellness in progressive MS.
That's an excellent point. I just want to check in with the operator one more time as we approach the top of the hour, whether there are any questions coming in through the phone lines.
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad.
Okay.
And there are no questions at this time.
Okay. Well, I think we're at the top of the hour. I think we've had a really robust and interesting and, from my chair, pretty fun conversation. I hope it was the same for everyone that was listening. I want to thank Rob and Kathy for joining me in this dialogue and turn it over to Heather to take us home.
Great. Thanks so much, Bruce. And just want to thank our speakers again for taking the time to join us today. I know I speak for all of our participants when I say that we're very appreciative for you to sharing such a comprehensive and encouraging update on the significant progress that's being made to provide people the information and resources to live their best lives with MS. So before I close the call, I'd like to encourage everyone to please visit the Society's website to review the paper that Kathy had mentioned that summarizes the outcomes of the Society's recent wellness strategy meeting and to stay current on other updates involving the Society's wellness initiatives. And finally, I want to thank all of you, our participants, for joining us today. Your generous support is helping people with MS live their best lives as we drive research to stop the disease in its tracks, restore what's been lost, and end MS forever. Thank you so much, and this concludes today's presentation. Have a good evening.